Welcome to Crime Soup Podcast. I'm your host, Hannah Knappis.
And I'm Kaylee.
And this week we'll be discussing the mysterious death of a 33-year-old woman in Indianapolis, Indiana in 1962. This is the story of Agnes Chappell. On September 14th, 1962, a 60-year-old housekeeper at the York Hotel in Indianapolis, Indiana, was carrying out her morning cleaning routine when she stumbled upon a horrific scene. At about 7:30 in the morning, Lucille entered room 225 to find a deceased woman lying on the floor. She immediately informed hotel staff, who summoned the police. Based on her fingerprints found at the scene, they identify this deceased woman as a 33-year-old woman named Agnes Chappell. Agnes was found lying on the floor near the foot of the room's bed, with one hand still clutching the bed skirt. She was completely naked and covered in blood.
Her hand was around the bed skirt still? Like, she was holding on to it?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But she's dead. Is that weird? Like, she wouldn't let go?
That feels very weird to me, because don't your muscles relax? Unless she was already in that position when she died.
Maybe the bed skirt fell down, and it was still in her hand.
Weird.
An autopsy concluded that Agnes had died as a result of massive internal hemorrhaging caused by multiple vaginal lacerations that were most likely inflicted by a glass bottle or a similar object.
Oh my God.
Initially, they estimated that her cause of death was between 7 p.m. and 3 a.m., but later they narrow that window significantly, and they say actually between 3 and 4 a.m. is when she finally died.
Oh my God, did they know how long she suffered? Like, between 7 and 3, presumably?
A long time, because there was a lot of blood, and we're going to talk about it. So, yeah, I should have put a huge, massive trigger warning.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
This episode has a lot of blood. So, yeah, just fair warning.
And, like, presumably violent sexual assault.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, let's look at the crime scene. So, evidence at the scene indicated that the injuries inflicted on Agnes had occurred on the room's bed. And they're able to determine this because the mattress and the box spring were found to be just entirely soaked through with blood.
Oh my God. With the amount of blood, my brain immediately says, how did she not die faster?
You're going to figure it out.
Oh, sorry. I'll stop interrupting.
No, you're gonna. So, and I don't know how they determined this. My best guess is that they must have found a bloody handprint, but detectives point out that it looks like at one point she attempted to stand up and was using the wall for balance before she collapsed at the foot of the bed. Also in the hotel room was a lot of trash. They say trash, but I think most of what's described is just a lot of beer cans and empty liquor bottles. They count the number of liquor bottles as half a dozen empty bottles of gin.
What?
Six. So roughly six bottles of gin, which... I'm not really a heavy alcohol user, but that sounds like a lot.
How long had they been staying in this hotel?
She had checked in the previous afternoon at 2:45.
Oh my God.
Yes.
So whoever was drinking these was heavily, heavily intoxicated, probably the whole time they were there.
Yeah. Also, in the hotel room, they found a wet, bloodstained pillowcase, so just the pillowcase. And the way that the detective describe it is that it looks like someone had tried to clean it.
Clean the pillowcase?
Yes. But we don't know why. So that's part of the mystery. And despite the condition of the room with all of the empty beer cans and all the blood, they said it doesn't actually look like a struggle took place, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like she fought anyone. There wasn't any, like, upended furniture or, like, blood splatter, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about a few of just the really off-putting things in the room that I don't have an explanation for that I want to talk about. So the first one is, if you have any theories about the wet pillowcase.
I have some thoughts about that. I'm assuming somebody did this to her. I don't think she did it herself, obviously. We're on a true crime podcast. Somebody did this to her, realized how much it was bleeding, and then tried to use the pillowcase almost as a way to stop the bleeding. So maybe shoved it inside of her to hold pressure and realized there was a lot of blood. And so that was the first blood they really saw. Like that was like the major, like the beginning of the blood. And then they tried to wash it off thinking that they could cover this up. Yes. Thinking they could cover it up. But after it kept coming, it was a lost cause. So they tried to wash it and it didn't help, obviously. And my second thought is the person who did this to her got cut somehow and it's their blood and they tried to wash it off.
Gotcha. Those are two really good theories. I didn't even think about that. You're a genius, Kaylee.
That's why I'm here, because I'm insane. That's why you think keep me like around. A killer.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's mystery number one, is the wet bloodstained pillowcase, which I like your theories. I'm going to stick with those because I don't have any. I'm just like, this is weird.
Have you ever tried to wash a lot of blood off of something and like it just congeals and it stays, but it like gets lighter and presumably you use warm water? Like, okay, so my first... let me re-say this. If that was the case, if it looked like it was washed with warm water where it just congealed and got a little bit lighter, but ultimately it's still there, then I think a man tried to wash it out.
Why do you say that?
Well, because women deal with blood all the time. Anyone who has a period knows that you wash bloodstains with cold water. Mm-hmm. Anyways, continue on. Now I really want to hear the rest of the story. I'll be quiet.
Okay. So other odd things. Also on the nightstand was her upper dentures. So she's only 33 years old. I don't know the backstory about why she has false teeth, but her upper dentures, so just like the top set, were removed and set on the bedside table.
Could be drug use. That's my first reaction.
Why her teeth are missing?
Yeah. Drug use. Because that seems really common. Lesser common things are like dental disease, right? Which maybe it's genetic. Maybe, I don't know. But I think the more likely option is probably drug use or homelessness, like not being able to take care of your teeth. But then she has dentures, so I don't know. Was she homeless? Did this woman have like a normal home life?
I'll go ahead and jump forward to that. I was going to talk about it later, but let's do it right now. She is a heavy alcoholic.
Okay.
And the alcoholism got bad enough that her husband separated from her 3 weeks before this.
Oh.
Which probably exacerbated her alcohol use.
Yes.
But 3 weeks before this, her husband moved out and he moved back to Ohio to live close to his family and he took their three kids with him.
Oh.
So this is a bad time in her life.
Very bad.
She has three kids, all sons, who were age 7, 12, and 14. Which, if you do the math, she would have had her oldest son when she was only 19.
Very young.
Okay, so back to the hotel room. Also in the hotel room, we talked about the wet pillowcase and her dentures are out. Her black leather handbag, her purse, is there. And inside, they don't find any of her identification or any money. So maybe somebody took it or she just didn't have it. We don't know. And then inside were also two dry cleaning tickets and a room key to the Indianapolis Athletics Club.
What's an athletics club? Is it like a gym?
Yeah. So the police check these things out and they contact the dry cleaners and the dry cleaners confirm that she had been into their shop that morning and had dropped off two waitressing outfits for them to clean. So I'm assuming she's a waitress.
Okay.
They contacted the athletic club and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but the athletic club owners essentially were like, we don't know who this woman is and we don't know why she has a key.
Wait, it wasn't like a membership card. It was an actual key to the facility.
It was a room key. But essentially, they contact the athletic club and they are like, we don't know who she is. She's not on our record. So she's not like a member. So they don't know why she has this key. The purse had no money. It had no identification. I'm left to believe that someone took her identification and her money out. Because it seems weird that she wouldn't have any ID.
My first reaction is they took it hoping that it would slow down the identification process.
Yeah, because they had to do fingerprinting.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to go too deep into it. She does have a criminal record, but it's not like anything really big. So it's kind of a rabbit hole I don't want to go down, but it's like really petty stuff that doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Okay, this is also where it gets really weird, and I want your hypotheses. So several articles of her clothing were found just kind of strewn on the floor in the hotel room, including her shoes, which were blue canvas shoes, her blouse, but then her skirt and her underwear, her nylon underwear, were found 15 feet down the hall in a janitor's closet.
Oh, 100% somebody is worried about being connected to whatever happened there. Whoever did this to her knows that there will be an identification process and that it will slow them down a little bit to take her identification away from her purse. And they know that they probably do forensic testing on like underwear to check for like sperm or other bodily fluids that can be linked to other people. And their reaction was probably to remove that from the room so that police think that it's not there. And then that also slows down the process or halts the process of them doing forensic testing on that underwear for bodily fluids altogether. So my first reaction is whoever did this has a knowledge of these processes.
Okay, but they didn't like destroy it. They didn't take it with them. They never recovered her ID. So if they did take the ID, they probably took it with them and like chucked it out the window. Why? Because they found this little bundle of clothes 15 feet away in a janitor's closet. It was like tucked in between by some cleaning supplies.
Mm-hmm. So
that's not very hidden.
No, it's not. But my thought process here is they were freaking out. They didn't want to bring these clothes that probably had blood and other bodily fluids on them in their mode of transport.
Their car. Yeah.
Because it could link them in a really damning way. So it was better to take the chance to move them somewhere else. And maybe somebody else was coming and they didn't want to be seen with these things. Like it was just like a really fast, like, holy shit, I got to get rid of these and somebody's going to see me with them. And they found an open door and threw them in there. And Okay. Stuff like their identification is much easier to get rid of in another place because...
Yeah. Okay, so I shouldn't think this person is doing it for a genius reason. They're doing it for a stupid reason.
It's panic reason is
it's
what
panic.
I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And those clothes were confirmed to belong to Agnes. So it's not like maybe they were someone else's. They were hers. So that's pretty much everything in the hotel room that we're going to talk about. So next we're going to talk about what the hotel employees had to say, because they had a lot to say.
Oh.
So according to the desk clerk, her name is Edna Ball. She's 60 years old. She remembers Agnes coming in at 2:45 p.m. So this is just the day prior.
Mm-hmm.
And she was accompanied by what was described as a neatly dressed man.
A fucking politician.
He was described as being in his 40s, clean shaven, and wearing a suit. The pair registered as husband and wife under the name Mr. and Mrs. R.B. Robinson, and they listed their home address as Terre Haute, Indiana. So they keep talking to the hotel employees, and they find... It doesn't say what her name is, but it says that they talked to one housekeeper who says that when Agnes and her male companion checked in, the housekeeper was in one of the hotel rooms, like, getting it ready.
Mm-hmm.
And Agnes wandered in. It wasn't her room. Agnes just wandered in, sat down on the bed, and started reading a newspaper.
She was drunk chalk.
And the housekeeper described her as being dazed, which is, I think, just, like, kind of the polite way of, like, saying she was probably on something or inebriated or intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
And the housekeeper says that while this is happening, the male companion comes by and specifically says, "Honey, this is not our room," before escorting Agnes down the hall and into the correct room, which was 225.
Hmm.
So they don't describe him as dazed, but they describe her as dazed.
Very weird.
And what I think is one of the more important eyewitness accounts comes from the hotel bellhop. So the hotel bellhop is a 53-year-old man named Edward Gray. And he informs detectives that he made three different trips to room 225 that evening. He says the first time he went to the room, he delivered a case of beer around 6 p.m. So that explains
the beer everywhere.
The cans of beer, yeah. He says the second time he arrived at the room was about 7:30 and he delivered a food order. He doesn't say what food, though. And the third and final time he says that he delivers to the room was at 9 p.m. to deliver an order of gin. But he doesn't say how much gin. Edward claims that each time he made a delivery, a man opened the door, but only a few inches, just to retrieve the requested items. Okay, so keep in mind, the bellhop was there and witnessed a man in the room between 6 and 9, okay, for sure. So police continue to question the rest of the hotel staff and the guests, but no one really hears anything suspicious during that time. Like, didn't hear any screams or commotion coming from the room, and nobody saw the couple leave at any point. Like, they stayed in the room the entire time. They didn't see anyone leave.
Mm-hmm.
But this is super important. One witness told police that they had seen Agnes earlier that day, like before she even checked into the hotel. She was at a nearby bar. But the witness says that she was with a completely different man than the one that she came to the hotel with.
Like, she was with that man? Like, they were just talking, or...
Just that she was in the company of someone else that wasn't this guy. But that kind of explains why she maybe was dazed, because she was day drinking.
Yeah.
Like, before she even got to the hotel room, before she had that beer, before she maybe had that gin, she had already been drinking since that afternoon.
Yeah.
One thing that I forgot to mention earlier is that in the hotel room, remember how I said that some of her clothes were scattered, like her shoes and her blouse?
Yeah.
They also found a man's necktie.
Oh.
But that was essentially the only trace that a man had been in there besides the eyewitness accounts. Like, physically, there was nothing else indicating that someone else had been in there with her.
Weird. They didn't find any other DNA? Like, no hairs, nothing?
It was the 60s. I don't know if they...
That's true.
I don't know how thorough. I imagine if this happened today, it would be a lot different.
Yeah.
Luckily, there were so many eyewitnesses because this guy checked in and the clerk saw him and... other guests saw this man's face, right?
Yeah.
So the police produce a composite sketch and they release it to the public. And this proves really successful because one day after Agnes's body is discovered, a gas station attendant in nearby Shelbyville, Indiana, phones in a tip to police because a man comes in about 5 o'clock in the morning to buy cigarettes and it looks like the composite sketch. So the police are like, awesome. So the police set up a roadblock hoping to stop this guy.
Yeah.
But something weird happens where the man approaches the roadblock and he just drives around it.
The more you talk about him, the more I'm like, this guy is a politician for sure. He thinks the rules don't apply to him.
No. It turns out that this isn't even the right guy.
Oh my God.
So some gas station... owner is just, or some gas station attendant is like, that looks like the guy. They set up a roadblock. He drives around. The police shoot at his car and take out his tires.
Oh my God.
They discharge their shotgun twice and they strike his station wagon's tire and they disable the vehicle and they arrest this guy.
Could you fucking imagine being that guy and being like, I do not think this is warranted.
So this guy, I don't even know if it's worth talking about him, but he's not the right guy. He's just a 47-year-old guy named Carl. And
poor Carl.
Poor Carl. They question him about Agnes, and he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? I shouldn't laugh, but, like, could you imagine? The police shoot at your car, and they're like, did you murder this woman? And he's like, no.
He was having a bad day for sure. He was up at 5 a.m. for cigarettes, and then he got his... fucking car shot out by the cops? Damn.
He just wanted his smokes.
Damn.
They charge him with speeding and then they release
him. Oh my God. Cops. Oh my fucking God. That makes me... Oh my God.
Okay. But here's what I don't get. I kind of get it, but... because it's a process. But what ends up happening is the police do more fingerprinting on some of the alcohol bottles. And on one of the bottles... they lift a fingerprint that belongs to, like a real suspect, not Carl.
Okay.
And I bet he talks about that all the
time. I'm sure he does. I would if it were me.
He's probably not still alive if he was 47 years old in 1962. No. But I'm sure he talked about it for forever, like telling his kids, like, one time I got shot out by the police and they thought I murdered a woman.
Damn cops took me for a murder suspect.
But I just got off with a speeding ticket. Okay. So police find a fingerprint on one of the alcohol bottles. I don't know why they find this one so much later, because they found hers immediately.
I mean, there were six bottles.
Yeah.
Right? So it probably took them a while, and they're being really careful and doing one at a time. I would imagine that. How long was it, though?
Between? A couple of days.
Oh, okay. Then yeah, for sure.
So they find a fingerprint on one of the liquor bottles, and it belongs to a 37-year-old man. So that's closer to the eyewitness description, right? They described him as being about 40. Mm-hmm. And it belongs to a 37-year-old man from Bargersville, Indiana, and his name is Robert Robertson.
So he had his fingerprints on file.
Yes, but I don't know why.
Robert Robertson?
Yes.
Red flag number one.
Yeah. I want to call him Bob Bobertson.
Bob Robertson? Or Rob Bobertson?
But this is also interesting because... do you remember what name the mysterious man signed in under?
Robertson.
No.
No.
What was it? R.B. Robinson.
Are you kidding me? Is this like a Michael Scott versus Michael Scarn incident?
I don't watch The Office.
Okay, well, Michael Scott creates like an alter ego Bond superhero guy, and his name is Michael Scarn.
That's dumb.
It's based on him, obviously, Michael Scott. But he gives him almost the exact same name. And whenever Michael is like in weird situations, he gives an alter ego, his name is Michael Scarn. Like it's one letter off from his real name.
Well, but this is like almost identical, because this guy's actual name is Robert B. Robertson, and he puts R. B. Robinson. So I don't know if he like got partway through his name before he's like, I should probably use an alias because I don't know anything about this woman.
Yeah, there's a part of me that's like, I don't think he went there with the intention to kill her because of how sloppy it was.
How dumb he was.
Yeah, he showed his face. He gave a name similar to his. Like, even if he was trying to be sneaky, that's dumb.
I don't think this guy is smart.
Okay, well, here we go. Here we go.
So the police track Robert Robertson down. And although he voluntarily offered to come to the police station, he refused to appear in a lineup and he refused to take a lie detector test.
You can do that? I mean, you can refuse to take a lie detector test, but you can refuse to be in a lineup? I didn't know that.
It's 1962, man. If your name is Robert Robertson, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, if you're a white man, you can do whatever the fuck you want, I guess. A lot of other people didn't have that same luxury.
A white man in a suit.
Yeah.
So he declined. I mean, I would also decline to take a lie detector test.
Oh, for sure. And that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. So I'm not going to blame him for that one, because nobody should take a lie detector test voluntarily.
Please fucking don't.
Yeah.
We are not your legal advice, but don't.
I mean, even though he declines to do these things, they're still able to arrest him, obviously. So they arrest him and they charge him with second-degree murder. He gets an attorney, and his attorney recommends that he should take a polygraph exam. That sounds dumb.
That does sound dumb.
Maybe he really thought it would clear him? So he takes the polygraph exam. I don't know if, like, all the questions they asked him were part of the polygraph exam, or if it was just, like, one big question and answer session. Mm-hmm. But he agrees to take the polygraph exam, and he talks to the police, and he actually just flat out admits, yes, I was the guy who checked in with Agnes into the hotel.
Oh.
So according to him, he says that the pair met in a nearby bar, which checks out, according to our earlier witness, that she was at a bar, and somehow they decided that they were going to get a room together. But Robert claims that after they got to the hotel room and they started drinking together, she became extremely intoxicated and passed out just before 7 o'clock p.m. Apparently, he says, after she passes out at 7, a few minutes later, he just gets up and he leaves and goes home.
Well, that's not true, according to the bellhop, because he fucking ordered food and gin.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So explain your reasoning.
So according to the bellhop, around like 7-ish, right? He was called to deliver an order of gin. Or was it the other way around? It was food around 7 and then gin around 9.
So at 6, he says he delivered the beer. Mm-hmm. So that would track with Robert's story that she got heavily intoxicated.
Off beer?
A case of beer?
I don't know. Maybe.
So she was already drunk when she came in.
Yeah. Okay.
But this is also 4 hours later, so usually you would shake it off.
Yeah, beer? Like, beer is usually lower in alcohol content, But maybe she's a lightweight. I don't know. Everybody's different.
And I don't know how much she weighs, because that would also affect her blood alcohol content.
And how much she had to eat and all that.
So, yeah, like you said, the timeline doesn't match. Robert's story doesn't match up with the bellhop, because the bellhop said he delivered a case of beer at 6, food at 7:30, which he's claiming he's already gone. So who's ordering food?
And who's the man that answered the door?
Exactly. The bellhop specifically said it was a man every single time. And then the bellhop said he came back at 9, so only 90 minutes later, with more alcohol. Apparently 6 bottles worth. That sounds expensive.
Christ. Yeah, especially hotel gin.
Yeah. So you're probably thinking, like, well, Robert's just lying, right?
Yeah.
He passed the lie detector test.
Okay, well, that doesn't surprise me, because those are kind of bullshit and they don't really work on people who have sociopathic tendencies.
Okay, but in 1962...
they didn't think that, yeah.
They just were like, okay, I guess he's telling the truth.
Yeah. Bye, Robert. Thanks for your time.
You laugh, but that's what happened.
Shut the fuck up. No. Are you kidding me? They're releasing people on the basis of polygraph tests.
The polygraph exam, and because Robert's alibi checked out because one of his relatives confirmed that he was home by 8 p.m.
Man, it must have been awesome to be a fucking cop, like in the 60s. You were probably all coked up, doing whatever the fuck you want. You got a gun on your hip, shooting out people's cars that drive too fast. You're just doing whatever the fuck you want with no basis, no tie to reality whatsoever. I mean, that's true now, but now we have video cameras so people can somewhat be held more accountable as long as the system coincides with that. But like back then, there was absolutely nothing holding you accountable. Even less so than now, which is saying something. God damn.
Okay, so I'll tell you what happens. I mean, I kind of already told you. He gets off, but the charges against Robert get dismissed. According to the prosecutor, several pieces of evidence indicated that Robert was not responsible for her death, including his alibi was confirmed. How much it took to confirm it, I don't know. But having just a relative be like, yeah, he was home, could have been his wife.
Literally.
Who knows if he's married.
Or his mom.
Yeah. So his alibi is confirmed, and he passes his polygraph exam. So her cause of death gets written down as acute alcoholism.
What?
Not the hemorrhage.
What?
I want you to guess right now, okay? I mean, you're relatively familiar with the concept of blood alcohol content, right?
Yes.
How high do you think her BAC was?
I mean, if she drank all of that herself, it was probably so high.
Just throw out a figure.
I'm guessing 10 times the legal limit.
Way higher than
that. Shut up. Tell me.
Okay, because what's the legal limit?
Isn't it like 1 point something?
So,
or I guess it's different everywhere, because in like Utah, it's only like 0.50 or something. Let me look it up.
No. So federally, across all states, you're legally intoxicated, like you can't drive and you can be arrested if it's above 0.08.
Oh, that's what it is.
Okay, there's a zero there, like 0.08. And like if you look up the charts, it depends on how much you weigh, like your body mass affects how much you can drink. So someone who's much larger, and it actually also depends on if you're male or female.
And how much food you have in your system too. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff.
And how much time passes. So for like every hour that passes, it should go down by like 0.01. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much she weighed, but her blood alcohol content, and this is not a typo, was 0.659, which...
Was she blacked out completely?
This would kill you. And that is why they put her cause of death as acute alcoholism. Because anything above 0.25, like half this, okay? I want you to think, at half this level that she was found with, people are comatose.
So she didn't do it to herself, clearly. She didn't put anything inside of herself, is what I'm saying.
That's where it gets confusing, or it gets controversial.
Uh-huh.
Because we don't know how long she was an alcoholic. And you can build up tolerances to drugs. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm just, I don't really have a lot of experience with alcoholism. So I would have to talk to like a professional, like a mortician or like a medical examiner. All I know is that like a normal person, 0.3, you would start to lose consciousness and you would go into a coma.
Mm-hmm.
And she was at double that. Obviously, your brain starts buzzing with conspiracies because you're like, is it even possible to consume that much on your own? Like, yeah. Was somebody forcing it down her throat? One theory is that, like, they could have been putting it in her anally.
Yes.
You know?
Was it anally or vaginally?
I mean, either way, your body would absorb it, right?
Yeah, but didn't she have vaginal lacerations?
Yes. So, is it possible that they were, yeah, drugging her vaginally, and that's how she got the lacerations from a glass bottle?
Well, first of all, who is Robert Robertson? Like, is he just a random guy? He has a random job. He's totally normal.
The newspapers don't say anything about him. Like, we just know that he's from Burgersville and he's just some random guy. Why did he kill her?
Okay.
Because I just want to quote one thing. So okay. Initially, when her body was taken to the medical examiner,
mm-hmm.
his exact words were, "This is the work of a sadist." But after everything was said and done and the charges were dropped and they had to write out her official cause of death report, they wrote down that the wounds were possibly self-inflicted.
Of course they wrote that because they don't... Okay.
Because technically, they're like, she technically could have done this to herself. And this guy said he was home by 8 and she died at 3 in the morning. So...
You know what kills me about our legal process sometimes in the United States is that sometimes we aren't operating hoping or trying to get to the truth. We are trying to reach the conclusions of the information that we were given instead of looking for what actually happened, looking for the mm-hmm. reality of the situation. I don't know if the way I said that makes sense, but basically
they're just trying to close the case.
Exactly. You're told that B is what happened. And so all of the conclusions you try to reach are to try and justify B instead of trying to prove whether or not B actually took place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but this is what I think happened. I think that Agnes was vulnerable. She was at the bar. She was probably chatting it up with multiple men. And she may or may not have known Robert longer than just meeting him that afternoon. But Robert knew she was drunk, figured he'd be able to talk her into doing some weird sexual things, or just having sex with him in general, and took her to that hotel. Then he gave a fake name, not thinking that he would kill her, but thinking that she wouldn't be able to track him down if he gave a fake name to the hotel if she tried to look him up, right? Basically, they both get drunk, and he wants to try weird shit on her, so he puts a bottle inside of her, thinking that it'll be fun and sexy. Maybe it's to get her more drunk, and maybe that's the bottle has alcohol in it, and that's why her blood alcohol level is so fucking high. He thinks this is fun, sexy time, but he's being sadistic and terrible and psychotic and evil, because who does that to somebody? It breaks, it lacerates her vaginally, he notices blood, he freaks out, he tries to stop the bleeding, but she's comatose because she is so fucking drunk. He tries to wash off the blood, it's too much blood, he doesn't know what to do. He freaks out, he tries to leave.
And I think the reason her blood alcohol content was so high is because she was absorbing it.
Yes. And it probably
vaginally.
Even happened post-mortem, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Her alcohol content was so high, she was basically comatose. She briefly came to long enough to stand up. But I think there was just several hours where she was literally just bleeding out. Like, he left. I don't know what time, but I think he left. She didn't die until 3 a.m., 4 a.m.
But he left sometime between 9 and 3.
I think he's lying about the timeline. I think it was him who accepted the bottles of gin.
Mm-hmm.
And he used them on her.
Yes.
And he left sometime after that. But I want to propose another theory, because this was posted on Reddit. That's where I saw it.
Okay.
There were some other theories online. Most people think that Robert Robertson just lied and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another theory that, let's say Robert Robertson is telling the truth, that she got drunk, he got kind of turned off, he was like, I'm leaving, I've had enough fun with her, I'm going to go home. What if he does leave, You know, he has that food delivered maybe and he gets home by 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
What if someone else slipped in there?
You mean like the bellhop?
Yes. The bellhop or a janitor. Someone who knew that she was heavily intoxicated, or maybe Robert Robertson told some guy, like, hey, she's in there. You can do whatever you want to her. She won't know a thing.
Did the police interview anyone else?
No. It's just a theory. Like, there isn't really that much evidence to support it. But if you were going to go down that avenue that he's telling the truth and he passed his lie detector test and his alibi checks out, it is possible that someone else could have done it.
Yeah, especially since the janitor closet was like 15 feet from her room.
Very close, yeah.
Aren't janitor's closets normally locked?
I don't have an answer to that. And I feel like that would change the investigation if it required a key.
Yeah. But the most straightforward answer is that it's Robert.
Yes, and like, what is it, Occam's razor? Like, the most simple explanation is usually the correct one.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's possible that since the man who ordered the things didn't open the door very far, that he didn't get a good look at him, so it could have been a completely different guy, or it was the bellhop.
Yeah. But then the bellhop would be recounting the story of how he opened the door on himself, so he's just trying to paint it that Robert was still there, if it was the bellhop. Or, I guess, a different man, like a janitor or some random guy who's staying in the hotel or working there.
I lean more toward that it was probably just Robert, and lie detector tests are bogus, and his relative just lied and said that he was home by 8.
I mean, all of those things happen anyway. Like, relatives lie about alibis all the time. That's why there's, like, a common and cultural phenomenon that you don't trust somebody's mother to prove their alibi.
You should not trust my mother. She would lie for me. I'm just saying it right now. Because she's got nothing to lose. She'd be like, I can go to prison. It's fine. She would do that for
me. Your saintly mother.
Yeah. She would do really well in prison because she's just so likable. She would have no problems.
The prison mama.
Quick story. Totally unrelated. But my mom, 1 year for Halloween, and my mom is like a saint, just everyone loves her, right? She's just nice to everyone.
Yeah, she is.
She takes care of everyone. 1 year for Halloween, she went as a convict. And I can't remember what she wore, but she dressed up like in the orange or the stripes or something, right?
Uh-huh.
And she drew on some face tattoos.
I am dead.
But she forgot about them and she went to the bank. And she got all the way home and looked in the mirror and she was like, I went out in public with these.
You know how they say, like, the sweetest people have, like, deep inner turmoil? Your mom was just testing out her alter ego.
Yeah. Yeah. I can get on board with that.
I fully support her face tattoo era.
Okay, well, I don't have anything else to say. I don't even have strong feelings one way or the other. I want to say probably just Robert Robertson. But also, like, yeah, someone could have slipped in there.
I mean, either way, he was a fucker for taking her to a motel when she was clearly drunk.
Yeah.
So he was...
He should have gone to jail just for that.
Yes, he should have. Like, he's a rapist for that.
Taking advantage of this woman.
And you can tell his mother I said that. or whoever gave him an alibi. I don't know. I still feel like it was probably Robert. I hate it when it's inconclusive. I hate it when I don't feel like, yes, it was that bitch and we're going to lock him up. I don't feel like that, unfortunately. I do feel like Robert should be punished, though, because I feel... He did it. I can't talk myself out of it. I think he did it.
Your theory about the pillowcase, though, I think that's spot on. I think he didn't intend to lacerate her. He tried to stop the bleeding, panicked, left. We know one thing in that it's not self-inflicted.
No, it's definitely not.
Especially if she was that inebriated, would she even have the consciousness of mind to even be able to do that to herself? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
You know what, Kaylee? I feel like we solved it.
Yeah, we did. Put us on the case, boss. I'd be a better cop than the cops in the 60s, 100%.
I don't know if I would be. I would totally want to shoot out some tires.
Okay, then you're not hired. Sorry.
I would make a terrible cop because I think I would get a little power mad. I'd be like,
okay, you're definitely not hired. We need less of that shit. You're fired, in fact. Fired.
Can you just keep me like on the bench? I'm a bench warmer. So when you need some tires shot out.
Oh my God.
Call me. And then I'll go back to my bench.
Absolutely not. You're sitting this one out, boss.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week. We're going to have a whole new episode. If you haven't already, be sure to find us on TikTok. We're on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, you name it. We're like everywhere. We also have a website. It's called crimesouppodcast.com. Not only can you listen to all of our past episodes, you can also buy your very own Crime Soup merch. And let me just tell you now, it's like rad as hell. It's especially perfect for soup season. Like, we got tons of sweaters, warm, comfy things. You definitely want to check it out. But other than that, stay safe. We'll see you next week. Bon appetit.